welcome to Out and Proud. This week, you may have studied their poetry for the Leaving Cert, heard the power of their bedum in a TV ad, or enjoyed their tour de force in Wake from This Is Pop Baby. Felicia Olasanya, aka Feli Speaks, you're very welcome to Out and Proud.
Thanks for having me.
Felicia, over the last few years of doing this show, we've had a lot of people on, and as much as we try to avoid it and getting bogged down in labels, sometimes they provide a bit of a shorthand. So for instance, you are a self-described Black Irish queer culty. That's a lot to balance.
Yes, it is. But yeah, I've just lived like this all my life, so I think I'm pulling it off.
And was it ever confusing?
I think confusing, maybe not so much. I think I've been in a state of sorting for a lot of my life, like deciphering what each mean and what weight I decide to carry with each, and then accepting it and being comfortable with it. It's been a journey.
And did that sorting start at a really young age?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think.
I mean, you're still young, just to clarify.
I'm actually just a baba.
Yeah, you are. Exactly. What age are you now?
I'm 29.
29. Okay. So when did the sorting start?
I'd say the sorting probably started as young as I could write. When you start trying to understand in general, when you start trying to use your mind to decipher the world, I think that's when the sorting starts. So I think I started writing about... maybe about 10 or 11 in any kind of expressive way. And I think from then on, this sorting began. I'd say probably more efficiently about 15, raging hormones, regular. But yeah, I'd say probably as young as then.
And did any of those labels feel particularly oppressive? Because unfortunately, we are often railroaded into this is what a boy is and this is what a girl is.
I think, yeah, because you're just not sure whether... what they're saying those labels are fit you. And I think I was never really sure. I wasn't really fitting all the markers that girlhood should assign me. And I think because I wasn't sure about it, it was always in the air as a question mark.
And did background play a part, I mean, culturally?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think when you're African and raised religious on top of that, and then on top of that you're in a new... way of living, especially for your parents, where they're like in a new place, new town, new city, you tend to operate in those boundaries differently.
And did you feel like you belonged?
I think that's a tough question, because I think it's only when you mature enough to question belonging that it becomes a problem, if that makes sense. I think because I've always seen things that I could relate to around me, I don't think belonging was ever necessarily the question, especially in my youth, and youth being pre-18. I think when you get into college, you see how big the world is. It's much wider than your community or your immediate background or your immediate safety nets. And so probably belonging didn't become a question until college years, I'd say.
Because often when we're teenagers, we want to fit in. But it sounds like you were comfortable not fitting in.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Which is a great thing.
Yeah, but also my world has always been a little bit strange. Like living in Longford or growing up in Longford, I went to a very multicultural primary school and secondary school. I mean, the wider town was probably always inherently white Irish, but my immediate environments didn't make me feel unseen or non-belonging, because in school there was everybody that looked like everywhere, and in church there was everybody that looked like my hometown or like my family unit. So that was a different thing. And then so the two places where my world evolved didn't have me feeling displaced. So like between church and school, I felt at home.
You didn't feel, because obviously it being church, the rules, regulations, etc.
Yeah.
And fitting in to some degree.
Yeah.
Did you feel that constrictive or non-constrictive in terms of where you were at?
I think because I enjoyed church as a kid, there was the idea of wrestling with my gender identity was very different to my experience of like liking God. Just like those are two different containers for me, until you hit 19 and then you realize, oh, they can't live in the same world. Oh, whoops. You don't realize your I think I didn't realize that I was rebelling spiritually. I knew that I was rebelling culturally because the people that had things to say was the people in my immediate environment, like family or friends. But God didn't say that I couldn't exist as I was. I didn't question that for a long time.
And you still have a relationship with God?
Yeah, I do.
And how is it?
I think it's great.
I'm sure he does too. A pronoun for God.
I address God more as a they, actually.
Yeah, I would too.
Because if you're a multiplicity of a thing, you can't be confined by gender. That doesn't make any sense.
And if you put them on that they pedestal, it's just, for want of a better phrase, the pedestal, you don't feel fear then, because often religion is fear.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I had to come out of the confines of religion or organized religion specifically to just explore my relationship with God outside of that. And I think once I started exploring spirituality outside of Christianity, because I was raised Pentecostal, once I started realizing I still had access to God without being in a church, I was like, oh shit, like, God is good. And I was like, I feel fine. Like, I could begin deconstructing. I started deconstructing my relationship with Christianity at 19. And that was weird because I really enjoyed it because it was where I could home my spiritual nature. And it was the thing that was closest to me. It's like, oh, everybody's going to church. Oh, cool. Let me go to church and learn this Bible the best and understand it the most and understand God. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't because I was told to. I just liked hanging out with God.
So would you clarify yourself more as spiritual than religious now?
Yeah, 100%. I'm not a Christian. And I think once you don't abide by its inherent rules, then you can't claim to be it, I don't think. I think once you're just like, if I don't think I need to go to church in order to have a relationship with God, I'm already breaking one of the rules.
Well, church generally feels like it's supposed to be an appointment. Must go Sunday to church. Must have that moment with God.
Yeah.
Well, it's God, your God, anybody's God, can be, you know, instantaneous and always.
Yeah, and I think the concept, because I also don't think that it's bad or stupid to be religious. I think many people need spirituality in that way that has them, that gives you rules and organization that you don't have to create for yourself. And I think it's we underestimate how much it holds people's psyches. And I think if that's how best they can access God, then power to you. Just leave the rest of us alone.
I don't know about you, but for me, among my peers in the community, this is not a conversation that we'd have much at all. What about you?
I think I'm having a lot of those conversations because I think I've always been spiritually queer, for lack of a better word. Like, do you get what I mean? Like,
you might have to clarify that.
And I think what I mean by spiritually queer is that, like, even in how you're supposed to experience and access spirituality by ways of organized religion, I've addressed it, liked it, enjoyed it, and then decided, oh no, actually, I can do it a little bit better in my own way. And I think that's a queerness. Like, I don't think queerness is only sexuality. I think it's a way of living.
It's an approach.
Exactly, yeah. An approach to life.
Yeah.
And I think once you're entering realms of deviation consistently and you're comfortable operating in it and you're not confused by it, that's a type of queerness.
That is such a great concept, isn't it? You're making me think now out loud. You have such curiosity, obviously, and obviously great energy. You obviously have such a self-awareness too. Mm. Did you always have a place to channel that? And if you did, where did you channel it and how?
Where did I challenge that? I think a lot with writing, just addressing ideas through my writing and through conversation. I'm a yapper.
No.
I live in Yappersville. And like, I just consistently surround myself with people that are also curious and also comfortable with questions. And also let me, even if they're not going as far as I am, letting me have the safety to explore in that way and to poke at their imagination via mine or whatever. But I think I've always channeled that through conversation, words, writing.
And when and how did you realise poetry was a place for you to channel that as well?
Ooh, probably Raging Hormone, age range 14 to 16.
But were you scribbling thinking this is just me getting stuff out?
Yeah.
When did you, or maybe other people might have drawn your attention to, when did you think, yeah, this is actually good poetry?
Ooh, good poetry. Oh, wait now. I'd say maybe college. I started doing gigs in my second year of college.
When you say gigs, what were you doing?
So I call it stand-up poetry in the way that you would recognize stand-up comedy, where you get up on a mic and you just spit bars for like a segment of time, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And so I started doing those open mics, get on the mic, you just try out your work. I did poetry slams and represented Maynooth University at an inter-varsity poetry slam. And I won.
Yay. Why am I not surprised?
I won and went on with this girl and... We all just started gigging in Dublin and it just took off. I think I was really determined to make some, even if it wasn't going to be that I was going to make a living from it, I wanted to make something from it because it made me feel so viscerally and it made other people feel so much more when I spoke. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. So maybe about, yeah.
So it comes from deep within.
Yeah, it does.
And what kind of topics were you covering then and what you approach now, or just on the day at the moment, what you feel?
I think younger, it was a lot of existential questions that didn't have even a funnel for an answer. Like I didn't even know what I was trying to tackle. Like I was writing about gender identity before I knew that I was writing about gender identity. Like, do you mean I didn't have those terms for a really long time? Maybe not until like early 20s, mid 20s. So I was covering a lot of identity related things, confusion about just growing up and being, questions about love, questions about family. And I think it then evolved into like larger witnessing the world questions, like what are we doing about this crisis and that crisis? And I think it just kicked off from there for me. And now I think the work that I'm creating at the moment is a culmination of not just advancing in process, but advancing in how I speak about those topics. And so it's not that I've stopped talking about them. I've just refined how to talk about them. And so instead of doing stand-up poetry, as I stated earlier, now I think it's more, it's evolved into a lot of theatric, poetic landscape. Writing poetry in the theater or in the context of theater has been my favorite way of expression and expressing now, and then kind of learning how to act and deliver them. So I've been growing those two things in tandem, my performance and my pen.
You're obviously darn good at it because you're on the Leaving Cert syllabus.
Yes.
Is right. That is, it's such a core Irish experience. You must be so thrilled. How does it make you feel?
It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it is cool actually, isn't it?
It feels quite random because I'm like, I don't know how I pulled it off, but I pulled it off. And I'm not even dead. Like, I just think that's amazing.
I'm not even dead. But I mean, also, you're right. Most poets who aren't are unfortunately no longer around. But I mean, does it feel that it's kind of being ripped apart to a degree? Because people are analysing, students will analyse your poetry and they'll be looking for meaning. Do you think, is that a good thing? Are you happy with that? Or
I think it's a good thing. I think even if the visceral feeling for me is not necessarily it's good. It's that it just makes you feel. So if they're ripping it apart and they think it's crap or they think it's great or they're annoyed and disgruntled that they have to do it in the first place, at least it's poetry that they're talking about. I think art that makes you think and talk is good art.
And so the themes are universal as opposed to all, you know, based on gender, etc.
Oh,
sexuality.
Yeah. I think that the themes are universal. If you're talking about what I write in general or the project I have coming up. But my themes are, I think they're universal and I think that's why they land.
Now you do have, you mentioned there, a new project coming up. It's in the Dublin Fringe Festival in September. It's called Octopus Children.
Yes.
What's it all about?
Ooh, Octopus Children is layered for me. I think, like I mentioned, it's a combination of everything that I've either lived or attempted to live. And it's a combination of memory and imagination. It's a dreamlike landscape. It's a poetic landscape, but it's a coming of age story. And it's a love letter also to the Black, Irish and queer communities. And I think those being a type of person that lives on that intersection, I wanted to honor it with this story.
Do you feel representative of those, that you're doing a good job representing those communities?
I like to hope so. I think more than anything, I'm doing a really good job accepting, loving and living as myself. And I think if I do that well, then I am representing the communities and the intersection of those communities well.
Hallelujah. That is the way to go, isn't it? Such a motto. That could be our motto. We'll get t-shirts printed with that. We started talking at the beginning of the show about labels, and I really get the sense that listening to you, you've transcended labels. Mm. So would you say you're at peace with yourself?
Yeah, 100%. I feel a deep acceptance, gratitude and satisfaction with who I am. I think there's, because I'm still a living and breathing being, there's so much more to learn and grow and become. But in general, I really like myself. I think I even love myself. And I think I've come to peace with all the facets that make me me. Yeah.
How did you get there so young? Because I'm probably not even halfway there.
That's interesting. I think the past couple of years specifically has been a journey of acceptance without any covering. And I think what that means is not having anything to hide behind. So I don't have religion to hide behind. So my morals are mine. My ways of thinking are mine. The way I treat other people are mine. And not having necessarily like a partner, because I had a partner for a long time in my 20s, and the past couple of years not having that to hide behind in good and bad ways, but just being like the person that is, and Felicia just is. And being vulnerable and nude in that way has been really interesting. And also moving to Brussels in the past couple of years has been really interesting in that way. I've only just come back. And so being away has also meant like I've been sort of stripped of like the comfort of home in many ways. Family and friends not being immediately at hand. So like, okay, Felicia, how do you then prove that you are as lively and bubbly and can make friends and community and are in a completely new place? And can it still serve you? And can it still meet you at the point of your healing without you fast-tracking who you think you're supposed to be? So there was so many layers in the past couple of years that I had to really learn. Like, how do you handle money and not have potentially, if you were broke as an artist, because let's be honest, artistry is not linear or easy.
So or profitable usually.
Yeah. So if you were to be broke as an artist in a different country, how do you manage that? Not having the dole, if that was even anything that you would think about relying on. So there's just been many ways to get to the point of acceptance and recognition of self.
You mentioned vulnerability. Do you think it's something we shun in the general queer community more than outside of it?
I think so. But like, I think we shun vulnerability in many communities. I think it's not just queer communities. And I think we do actually a better job accepting vulnerability in queer communities than outside it, because our vulnerability becomes our superpower. The vulnerability of being nude to the world in quote and unquote the coming out, which is its own conversation. I think those vulnerabilities are empowering, and it becomes a superpower. It becomes our bat signal in how you like bring everybody else into like safety. Like, because if I'm visibly queer, Black Irish intersection from Longford, Cultyland, and somebody else is like, oh shit, I'm from County Clare, and I'm 16, and I'm Black Irish, and I'm queer too. That becomes something, doesn't it?
100%. But do you feel a responsibility to that then?
I don't think it's even responsibility. I think, like I said before, I think it's just about being true to self.
But and I think for the 16-year-old in Clare sometimes, yeah, or anywhere else, rural in particular, maybe rural more so than urban sometimes, it can be a little bit tougher, I always think. Because
yeah,
I was rural, and I always thought, yeah, where else? Where are the rest of the gays?
Literally, there's no rest of the gays. Everybody's yeah, in the closet. The big clear closet, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But being from rural Ireland and being queer is a really difficult conversation. And I think the layer of being a child of an immigrant is also really difficult. But I think I have lived in both bravery and bravado. And so sometimes I forget the difficulty attached to that.
Bravado can be a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I've had to embrace bravado in order to get to brave. And I think now that I've arrived at what you would call brave, where you're just like, okay, you know what? Damn the consequences. This is what I am. And this is how I am. And this is how I live. It can have that positive impact. and maybe it doesn't feel so much like responsibility because I've gotten past bravado. I'm just living in Brave. I don't know, it just that sounds so like and tongue twistery and airy fairy, but it's true.
Did you master the coming out? Did you have a big grand reveal or
accidentally?
How?
I went to my first Pride and then I wrote about it on Instagram and then I was
ouch.
Like
okay, I know where this is going.
I think like I had also been out to a lot of my friends before then, but I'd just forgotten about the wider internet.
Oh, Felicia. Tell all what happened next.
I just wasn't thinking about other people.
Right.
I just did it and I talked about it and it became this big explosive thing. But I think I was really proud of myself because I'd already arrived at it being quite matter of fact for me.
Because you were there. You're just bringing the others along with
you. Exactly.
Exactly.
It was already quite matter of fact for me. Mm. So I was just kind of like, oh, I realized that, oh, you are all discovered.
See, this is the era you were brought up in. It wasn't an issue in my day, social media.
Yes.
Which is probably a good and bad thing in a way.
Exactly.
So where would you, or how would you describe where you're at emotionally, I suppose?
Ooh, I feel quite grounded, but also like a bit achy. And I think what I mean by, I love the way Trevor just looked at me like, excuse me.
I'm not medically trained. I can't deal with this.
And I think what I mean by achy is just like, there's just a lot going on right now. And what I mean by a lot going on is like literally birthing this project. I've spent a couple of years actively writing it and
working. Octopus Children.
Yeah. I've been writing Octopus Children for a few years now. I've been tweaking and adjusting. And it just feels like, oh, it's finally happening. And it really does feel like birthing pains in many ways. Like bringing a project out in this way. It's just like 3 to 4 years of just carrying it, feeling like full of this like dream. And finally it's coming out. Just feels like, oh, there's a lot to do.
The waters are broken. It's happening in
the
September.
The waters are broken. I have like a month and a week.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited to share it with the world and have it out of my system.
When it's so personal, how do you know it's there, it's ready to go and be unleashed?
I don't have anything else to give it.
Oh, fair enough.
I just don't, like, unless, again, my favorite ways of creating is via collaboration. And so when we get into the rehearsal room next week and we spend a month, like, breathing life into it, if there's more edits and tweaks and other people's ideas, I'm open to that, making the script feel more alive, sure. But right now, I just don't. I've spent myself on this script.
I think you seem to have an absolute core of integrity. Do you think integrity is hard won?
Yeah. I think integrity is... I wouldn't be able to sleep if I wasn't convicted and lived by my convictions. Because then anything could have me. And I think that's dangerous. I think that's dangerous if you have a gift of any kind. If you don't have any integrity to go with that gift, I think you'd be quite lost by the wayside very fast. And it's hard to pick yourself back up if you didn't have integrity to begin with. And I think the things that have made me feel good about that is that I can let gigs go that my friends would look at me like, yo, are you sure? That was good money. But I'm like, oh, I just don't feel like my soul resonates, so maybe I'm not going to do that. And just being able to like trust my instincts, and I think that's brought me this far, so why not?
Felicia, I have loved chatting to you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Just if people want to see Octopus Children, it's at the Project Arts Centre from the 5th until the 14th of September. It's actually happening. It's part of Dublin Fringe Festival. Thank you again.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Out and Proud, presented by me, Trevor Keegan. Sound supervision was by Paul Murnoch. Production, of course, by Danny Lanagoyne. And the series producer is Jack Murphy.